Good afternoon, folks. You're here at 100.3 Sound FM. This is a lovely Tuesday afternoon. It's the Agriculture Show, and my guest today, Mark Reeser. Hi, Mark.
How you doing, Jeff?
I am just wonderful. If I was any better, I just couldn't stand it. And Angie Cook is here. Hi, Angie.
Hey, Jeff.
And we're going to talk a little bit about CSAs, and Mark will be here to talk a little bit about some issues in the Federation of Agriculture. So, let's start the show and talk to Angie, and tell us about yourself, Angie. You are the owner and chief everything of Fertile Garden CSA?
Yeah, Fertile Ground CSA. So CSA is community shared agriculture or community supported agriculture. So I've got 4 acres in vegetables just outside of Waterloo near St. Agatha, and I sell my vegetables through my CSA program and at the Kitchener Farmers Market.
How long have you been doing that? It's quite a while now.
I'm going into my 5th year.
Wow. And there's lots more to that. We'll talk eventually, of course, about the unique part of your business in the second half of our interview here, which is the economic model that you use, which is where you have your customers actually help you finance the operation. If that's, I'll let you say that in a nutshell before we go into it later.
Sure.
How do you describe CSA?
Well, CSA is essentially a model of food production, often used for vegetables, but there's other meat, grains, there's other types of CSAs that are out there. But what it does is it connects farmers directly with the people who eat the food they produce.
Mm-hmm.
So in a nutshell, members prepay to essentially become members in the farm mm-hmm. operation.
Mm-hmm.
And then in exchange, they get a share mm-hmm. in what's ready and available every week of the season.
Okay, well, let's talk about it a little bit later on. And we'll just get more about you, how you ended up being in this studio here today. You're went to the University of Waterloo. Tell us a little bit about your history, how you ended up in the Waterloo region and doing this.
Sure. I ended up in the Waterloo region because I came here for university. I studied social development studies, mm-hmm. which is sort of a social work and community development program. And I worked in that field for probably about 8 years after I graduated, and was fortunate enough to have part of my community development work be some urban agriculture.
Okay.
And I think I just sort of realized over time that the agriculture part of my work was the thing that was exciting me most, and I was anxious to be outdoors a little bit more and do something different. And I ended up doing an internship on an organic farm for a season, thinking maybe I'd kind of get the bug out of me and go back to my regular life.
And, just to check it out whether it was a real
bug. That's right.
Yeah,
it kind of ended up working in the opposite way and started up a farm the next year.
Ah, okay. So I know you're also busy now. As you were mentored, you've also providing other people a chance to get their feet wet in organic or local food. Would that be a better title in the local food movement?
Probably both.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
local organics, local ecological anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I work with an organization called Farm Start to do some training programs for people who are interested in getting involved in farming, a great organization based out of Guelph.
Yeah.
And I work with Everdale Organic Farm as a presenter and a mentor and a business plan reader for some of the people going through their training program called Farmers Growing Farmers.
I see Mark nodding his head. He's as a farmer himself, he knows you have to wear many hats and sometimes in your business, isn't it?
To be a jack of all trades, Jeff.
A jack of all trades. That's true. So you have the CSA now, and you market, you deliver packages to your customers plus a stall at the farmer's market, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I do CSA shares that people come pick up at the farm,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of neat because it provides an opportunity for people to see week by week how the fields change and go out and do some pick your own and just feel a sense of connection to the land base.
Yeah.
And then the rest of my CSA, I bring the vegetables into town,
mm-hmm.
And people come and pick up from a central location in town. And that's, you know, it's a different sort of feel. People are less connected to the land maybe, but they, a lot of people who are members of the CSA live in the same neighborhood, and it's really become a neighborhood hub. And it's interesting how my community development work has ended up really being part of how I do agriculture, and that's part of why I love the CSA model, is it's community development and food at the same time.
Yeah, it's an interesting part about this. You know, as a we're all farmers. Mark and I, not quite as connected to consumer as you are, but you know, we're all trying to make a living, and you found something that really resonates with some people, that personal connection. You know, this is good news, and you know, I was equipping to Mark one time. I think, Angie, you're probably the only young farmer that I know started out from scratch, wouldn't you say, Mark?
I mean, well, I think it's a great thing. It's special to see someone do that.
Yeah, so congratulations what you're doing, and I hope everything else, all your market development plans are working out. I know it's certainly a credit to you to have those first few years are the toughest. Would you not agree? You wonder whether it's...
I don't know yet.
You laugh. You don't know yet.
I hope so.
Well, that's a common thing for most farmers. They're just not too sure sometimes how this is going to work, but it usually seems to...
I'm just kind of curious, Angie. What is special about what you sell? How do you entice customers to come to you and get interested in your operation?
Sure. I mean, I think of CSA as having that model has some really great benefits for consumers, and it also has some really great benefits for me that dovetail nicely together. But for my members, for the consumers, I think one of the main benefits is the relationship piece. It's people are drawn to CSA because of some desire to have more of a connection with their food, more of a connection with how it's grown, and that there's it's sort of fulfilling to be part of the story of the food. And so a lot of people enjoy CSA because they're inspired by the food they receive and by the relationships that are formed, and it sort of feels a lot more whole than what they're finding on a grocery store shelf. So that's definitely a big part of it. There's also just the freshness. It's difficult, other than at the farmer's market, to find food that's been harvested same day or day before and be able to eat it right away. CSA farms often, because they're smaller, are able to grow some varieties of vegetables that wouldn't be suitable for storage life, and in terms of uniformity and some of the types of criteria that are really important in larger commercial operations, I can choose varieties that are really based on flavor and color and provide some variety. And so that's, you know, that's a really attractive feature for people too. They can eat vegetables they wouldn't find in the grocery store, and they can get varieties that are really bred for...
So we had Trevor Hurley on here, and he was describing his excitement over growing that soybean edamame.
Yeah.
Are you going to grow some of that?
I do grow some of that. It's really popular.
Yeah. It's tell our listeners what that is, if you...
It's edamame.
It's a soybean.
Yeah. It's sometimes called green soy. It's a fresh soybean that you boil in the pod and often salt heavily and sort of pull the beans out of the pod with your mouth and eat really fresh. Tastes pretty different than the sort of processed soy that you'd find elsewhere.
Well, it must be quite a process in the spring to pick out what's... You have to anticipate what people want, what you can grow, and all the rest of that sort of thing.
It's true, but in some ways it's easier than it would be with other types of markets, because a lot of my CSA members stick around from year to year, so I really have the ability to get to know their tastes, their palate, what they like. I have the ability to educate a bit of a captive audience over time. So partly I'm developing their tastes, and partly I'm responding to their tastes, and we can really... I can really hone what I grow to fit the needs of the eaters, and that's, you know, for me that's really it's a safer way to grow in a sense.
So Angie, where do you do your research? Where do you find these new varieties? Where do they come from?
There's a number of seed companies that sort of specialize in market garden seed production, and a lot of the organic seed companies, High Mowing in the States, Johnny's Seeds in the States, even William Dam. They're always looking to improve varieties. I also work part-time for Seeds of Diversity Canada, and so I'm connected that way to some ways to get more rare or heirloom varieties of seeds that have sort of proven the test of time but aren't so easily commercially available elsewhere. So I try to make a mix of...
So where do you get your stuff from? You grow a little bit of market garden too, don't you, Mark?
I just have a garden for my own use. I don't sell to anyone else, so I don't have to please anyone else except myself and my family.
So as a consequence, how do you go about getting your seed? Where do you...
Well, the last little while I've been using Google.
Okay.
That's an amazing tool to find new things. I also had the luck of having some older friends who were involved in heirloom seeds for much of their lives, and they told me what they knew, and they were the ones who interested me in it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff.
Maybe we should discuss what an heirloom seed is. Well, maybe our listeners don't know.
We'll chat a little bit longer, then we're going to have a little break, and then we'll come back and talk to Angie some more about the more of the unique part of our business, which is, as she relates to me, was the community shared aspect of it. Some other details in that. We didn't want to get too far before, because that's what makes yours unique, certainly amongst the local food operations. Are there others that are doing... I should wait till later. But just offhand, just to continue, are there other people doing CSAs in this region?
Yep, there are. Okay. The Working Center, Downtown Kitchener, Garden Party in St. Agatha, Transpire Organics is out near Fennings, Loft, local organic food team is a collective of local growers, Organic Farm up in Harrison delivers locally, there's more.
Okay. I didn't check out to see if they actually label themselves as CSAs, not that I went to all those websites, but... do you find the local initiatives for local food helpful? Offhand, Food Link we all are aware of, but boy, there's numerous resources that the province and the municipal governments are putting towards local food. That certainly must have helped a lot.
I don't know about, resources in particular, things coming from the government in particular, but certainly there is a coming together of energy and attention around local food that makes for a much more receptive local audience. Yeah. And, there's a lot more demand than there used to be. People are more educated and they're asking questions that I don't think 10 years ago people were asking. And that's really helpful because... right now, I've got the right answers to offer, so it's good for my business.
it's kind of ironic, Angie, isn't it, that 100 years ago, all food was local, and then for a period of time, very little of it was, and now it seems to be coming back.
Yeah, I guess things come round. We realize we've gone too far in one direction, and we start noticing what we're missing.
Yeah, well, we're all in the same business, and the sustainability for us, as mentioned before, is can we make a living? And so the good news is the consumer can have their choice of food at whatever level of what they're comfortable with as far as price and all the other factors that people choose. We certainly like to hear from our listeners from time to time, and then there's some folks in the studio behind us. Hopefully they'll come in later, and we'll ask these people who are hopefully that... just what comes to mind when you talk about agriculture and to know we're all on the right track here and that we're, covering the concerns of people as best as we can. That's the general plan. Hopefully it works out. Certainly, around the table here, we can all talk for quite some time on agriculture as being right in the business, but it's really important as a community radio station here in Kitchener-Waterloo that our urban audience can find some information and help in their decision-making, I think. Would you not agree? It's been in the long run. It's good that the our consumers know, ask us what it is that's there, tell us what their concerns are.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, good. Okay. We'll go to break then. We'll play a song here, and we'll be right back. It's 100.3 Sound FM CKMS Radio. This is the Agriculture Show. It's Tuesday afternoon. This one will be episode number 9 on March the 3rd. What's the date today?
4th.
It is. It is today.
It's Tuesday, Jeff.
It's Tuesday, the March the 13th. We'll be right back.
Lead on, oh great leader.
Out on the plains, down near Santa Fe, I met a cowboy riding the range one day. And as he jogged along, I heard him singing a most peculiar cowboy song. It was a ditty he learned in the city. A come-a-ti-yi-yi-yi, come-a-ti-yip-ti-yi-yi, get along. Little doggies, get along. Better be on your way. Get along. Get hip, little doggies. And he trucked them on down the old fairway, singing his cowboy. Western accent with a Harlem touch. He was raised on local weed. He's what you call a swing half-breed, singing his cow-cow boogie in the strangest way. Come to yi-yi-yay, come to yi-di-di-yay.
Grant here, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Sound FM 100.3 on your dial, or maybe channel 946 on your Rogers digital cable, or perhaps streaming live from www.soundfm.ca.
Hi, we're back. It's 100.3 Sound FM. That was Gord Grant, one of our fine helpers here at the station on that little promo. Today is my guests are Mark Reeser and Angie Cook. Thanks for coming out, you guys. I'm glad the good weather has come along and we're enjoying a fine early spring. Any predictions on whether we will have an early and I the farmer's almanac material here, folks. What's your best guess in the rest of the year, Mark?
I don't think we have to look in the almanac, Jeff. I think we just look out the window. And, if I were at home, I would be out there.
I was one of the resources on that. One of the agriculture websites has a study of the last 20 years of warm winters and warm springs, and there's a 10% correlation that we will have a warm spring because we've had a warm winter. That's the numbers.
Yeah, I've heard that in leap years we're more likely to have a cool, wet summer, though.
In leap years, okay.
Jeff, whatever comes, and farmers will live with it, won't we?
That's true. So let's talk a bit more about that business model that you use, Angie. And I know we have our urban listeners might be interested in how farmers usually make their income. And if you want to just review how you do market your material, your goods, that'd be great to hear. And tell us more about the CSA model and why you chose it.
Sure.
Thanks.
So CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture, or Community Shared Agriculture. And so the idea is that it's essentially a relationship-based model of growing and distributing and selling food. So essentially how it works is people become members in my farm. They pay up at the beginning of the season and are committed to receiving vegetables for me for the whole growing season. So the growing season for vegetables in this area goes from about mid-June until late October. And yeah. Other than that, you need season extension or storage or other things to extend the season.
So Angie, like what would a person pay to be part of your organization or to have a share in your CSA?
I do a couple different share sizes. It's to suit different households, but a small share is $400 for the season, so that's almost 20 weeks of vegetables, and it's about $20 worth of vegetables a week. And then I do a regular share, which is twice that for $700, and a large share that's 1.5 times that, that's almost $1,000.
So you cater to different people's needs.
Yep. And I actually run a CSA that isn't a pre-packed CSA. I put food out market style and make lists of what people have the ability to choose. So there's some predeterminedness to the shares, but there's a fair bit of choice built in too, so that people aren't taking home produce that they actually won't eat.
So whatever is available on that particular day, people are able to choose from.
That's right. Yep, so there's a limited amount of things that will be available in any given week, but there's choice within it.
So if Swiss chard wasn't your favorite vegetable,
you might be able to choose more lettuce or kale or bok choy or some other types of greens instead.
Sounds good.
So the thing that I think works really great, and one of the reasons that I chose CSA as a model, I think it's really twofold. One is the economics and one is the social. I'm drawn to the relationships that are formed through this style of agriculture, and the economics work out well for me as well. I'm getting money at the beginning of the season when I'm incurring a lot of expenses, so it keeps me from taking on debt at the beginning of the season and paying for that until the money comes in later.
That's so cool. I wish we could run our business like that, eh?
What
would we do? we're sleeping at the switch the rest of agriculture. The idea that the customer would actually help take the risk. Huh?
I think that's a great idea.
I know.
And again, I think it's almost retro because 100 years ago, everyone took their own risk because they grew their own food. Mm-hmm. And today, people don't anymore. And maybe it's a good example of what farmers go through in terms of the risks that they take.
Yeah.
The consumer now has the ability to share in that risk.
So just tell our listeners, just if you can, in just a few bits about how do most farmers make their income? There's some that some have marketing boards in place, some have not market price setting organizations.
I can give you the example.
Like in a nutshell, we take what price the market will bear.
Sure. I'll give you an example of someone who grows corn, for instance, and we all see corn out in the fields during the summer when we're out in the countryside. The farmer has to borrow money at the beginning of the year for seed and fertilizer and chemicals and land rent, if that farmer is renting land where he plants the corn. So most of the costs involved in planting that crop are up front, in that they have to be paid very near the beginning of the crop before a crop is even harvested. And then the farmer waits until the season ends and the crop is ripe and harvested, and then goes out and needs to sell that crop, and of course needs to sell that crop for more than what it cost to rent the land and apply the fertilizer and pay for the seed.
It's also true, though, that farmer can book a price ahead at a local elevator. I get what you're saying. It's certainly not as elegant as what Angie does in her farm operation. But it is possible for the grain farmer to book ahead a price.
Suffice to say, Jeff, that the farmer takes on a lot of risk, no matter whether he pre-sells that crop or whether he sells it at harvest.
Yeah.
The risk lies with the farmer for a significant period of the year.
Do you get crop insurance? Can you get crop insurance as a regular farmer?
No? I don't do crop insurance. I mean, my membership is my crop insurance. Okay. And the idea is that with a CSA, if there are CSA farmers are generally growing a huge diversity of crops, not just one. Mm-hmm. So our eggs aren't all in one basket, which is helpful from the get-go. But what that means then is that in a really hot, dry year, my greens probably aren't going to be great. Mm-hmm. Well, my members aren't going to get as many greens. Mm-hmm. But I'm making sure that I'm growing something for all types of weather, barring, you know, crazy hailstorms or something completely beyond my control. So the members will get a good diversity, but they won't necessarily get everything. And that's sort of the shared risk. It's not really... there's not much risk of them not getting anything, but right. some years the bounty is going to be astounding, and some years they're going to just barely get what they paid mm-hmm. for, and they might get more of the crops they love and less of the ones that they don't, but it, you know, that'll change from year to year.
Yeah,
that said,
great.
If there was a huge hailstorm, then the members would get a whole lot less, and I wouldn't be giving them their money back. And that's the part that really buffers me as a grower, is that people are willing to recognize that no matter how good a grower I might become, there are things that I just absolutely can't control. And it's a bit of a crazy business model to have your economic well-being resting so much externally on things that you just honestly have no control over at all. So sharing that within a community really means that it doesn't cost anyone so much if it's a rough year.
It really differs, Jeff, from most people who get a paycheck at the end of every second week. Because you know that when you finish that week, you're going to get a paycheck, and you already know how much that paycheck is going to be. With a farmer, one never knows until the very end, because one doesn't know what the weather will be like. One doesn't know whether it will be hot or whether it will be cold, whether that crop will be damaged or whether it will be perfect. It's something that is not fully understood, perhaps, by urban people, but risk is shared by farmers every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And you only get one chance a season. I had someone point out to me the other day that, you know, you could be a potato grower for 30 years. And, you know, think in most jobs, 30 years, you have a fair bit of experience. But at the end of 30 years, you've only planted potatoes 30 times.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because just yesterday there was a phone call from a news source in the area, and I relayed that basically in your career, you do something maybe 40 times. And because you only plant once a year, right? That's as best you can do. And so it's, you know, ordinarily, for instance, on planting dates, we just go by the long-term averages. Whether it's right that year or not, it's only in hindsight you can say that. I know in the case of corn, we mentioned corn, May 10th, I think, is the optimum date for Ontario for field corn. But it's a tough one. Just to echo what you said, you only get 30 chances at what you're doing.
and you had a question about the people, your customers who come out to your farm. Obviously, some of these people will know what's going on, and they're familiar with gardening and planting and harvesting and so on. There must be people, though, that are part of your CSA who are not familiar with it at all. How do you deal with them?
Well, they learn bit by bit. I mean, one of the nice things about the what food is available week by week changing is that people start to get a sense that there are different things that are available at different times in the year, and it exposes them to the idea that some things grow well in the cool weather and some things grow well in the hot weather. Members who are coming to the farm see cover crops going in and coming out and fields being turned under and trellises going up and coming down, so they're exposed to all of that. But I write a blog where I try to tell some stories to let people what's going on. I write newsletters every couple of weeks with recipe ideas for some of the less common vegetables, and again, to tell some stories about what's been up and what sorts of issues I've been up against and how I've been making decisions and how that may affect the customers or affect me. And I do work bees once a month where I invite any CSA members and actually anyone in the community to come out on holiday Mondays through the whole growing season and be part of whatever tasks we're in the middle of at that point in the season. And kids are invited, families are invited. And that's a really, you know, if people come out a couple times in the season, and a lot of people do, we have 20, 30 people out on a day, they get a chance to get their hands dirty and experience things a little bit.
Is there any frustration involved in doing that? Because I can imagine you're there trying to do your work. I mean, this is your livelihood. You're trying to earn a living, and yet you have these people coming out and peppering you with questions and perhaps not doing things, looking after the crops or weeding them or harvesting them in the way that you feel is the correct way. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that?
This is one of the biggest tensions in what I do, is trying to run an efficient, profitable business.
Yeah.
But I think what I recognize is that efficiency and profitability can be you can look at it in a couple of ways, and it's not just about what got done on one particular day. If I have a strong community of supportive, invested people surrounding my business, that is going to help me out more at the moments that really matter. because it means I have a really loyal customer base, and it means when I do run into trouble or things happen unexpectedly that would otherwise be big problems, there's a group of people who are really invested and understand better than the average vegetable consumer would what's happening, and they care about me and they care about my well-being and they want my business to survive because they consider it their farm. So maybe
point.
I don't get quite as many carrots weeded in a day as I would otherwise, but I think that that's a very small price to pay for what I'm gaining in the bigger picture. I think it makes my business more stable, even if it sometimes costs me a bit of time and energy.
So at the end of the day, when you've explained to 10 different people the difference between a lamb's quarters plant and a and a carrot plant and which should be pulled out and which should be left, you can still feel good about yourself at the end of the day.
Sometimes I'm totally exhausted by it. And I've gotten better over the years at structuring days better where volunteers are welcome and where we can use them really well, and days where it's not helpful to have people come out because it just slows our system down. And when we're ready for it and we've structured things well, I think we can make really good use of volunteers.
Yeah, that's true. This really, if you get everything lined up, it works really well, actually. Yeah.
So on a typical day during the growing season, how when do you arrive at the garden and when do you leave, and what do you do during the day?
A typical day during the main part of the season, we're harvesting most days of the week. So we'll get out there around 6 o'clock because that's about when it's light enough to see. We harvest hard for the morning. We have to wash and package all the vegetables, get them into the cooler. And then in the afternoons, often we're working on other tasks like weeding, putting up trellising. We transplant and seed right through till July. There isn't really a planting season for a vegetable operation. Lettuce, for example, I plant 10 times during the season because it only lasts for 2 weeks in the field, and I want to have it every week for the whole 20-week season. So those are ongoing types of tasks for us. There's irrigation line to lay out. And then twice a week we do our CSA distribution. So then we're packing up the food and putting it out on tables and welcoming everyone who's coming to pick up their share.
It sounds like it's more than just an 8-hour a day job.
We spend at least 10 hours in the field pretty much 5 days a week. And then I'm at the farmer's market on Saturdays, and then I run a business in the evenings.
Sounds like a busy life.
Yeah, when I say that there's some stability to this model, the flip side of looking at that is I might get more money for my produce because I'm retailing it myself, right? So I'm capturing the full retail dollar on a head of lettuce instead of selling it to a wholesaler who sells it to a distributor who sells it to a grocery store who sells it to a person. So I'm getting more for that head of lettuce than a non-direct or a non-CSA grower. However, I'm doing every part of the work along that chain. I'm doing the growing, I'm doing the packaging, I'm doing the distribution, I'm doing the sales, I'm doing the marketing, I'm doing the customer relations and the human resource management, and so I'm being paid for extra work.
But your customers can be assured that the only person who's touched that head of lettuce is you, the farmer, for the most part.
Yep, for the most part, me and my workers. Mm-hmm. Yep, and there's a trust in that mm-hmm. is worth a lot.
And it hasn't spent a week on a truck or on a plane in transit. It's right from the field just outside the city.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it's a great model. You just can't help admire it from any business perspective, the idea of sharing the risk with your customers. It is a risky business, and it's great.
I'm just curious, too. We're working with urban people who may not be familiar with agriculture and market gardening and so on. Do you get some odd questions from people? Some odd comments? What do they say?
Some of my favorites are actually at the farmer's market. I had a fellow come up to my stand and pick up a bunch of radishes that he looked like he wanted to buy, and he asked us how much, and we told him it was $1.50 for the bunch of radishes, and then a woman sidled up next to him and said, "Those are organic," and looked sort of horrified, and he looked at her funny and sort of nodded, and she elbowed him in front of us and said, "I don't eat organic." At which point the fellow kind of looked at her funny and looked at us sheepishly and dropped the radishes back on the table and walked away.
You seem to think it'd be the other way around. Isn't that the way?
Yeah. So yes, there are definitely some, responses that I don't quite know what to do with sometimes. And
perhaps the need for some further education.
Always need for further education, but we're getting there. We've come a really long ways, I think.
I have to relate a story of a friend of mine who is a strawberry grower near Toronto, and it just illustrates what some urban people know. And anyway, he one spring, long before strawberries even started to grow, he had some people arrive at his farm and ask, "Do you have some strawberries? Can we pick them?" And his response was, "No, I don't have any strawberries. It's only March." And he had to go through the whole process of explaining to them that strawberries in Ontario only are ripe at a certain time, and there are no strawberries produced in Ontario at other times of the year, including March or January or December. Those come from somewhere else. So it's interesting what people know and what perhaps we have to teach them.
Yeah, I certainly, this is the time of year as the weather's getting warmer where I start to get my first questions from my new members. My experienced members have started to catch on, but they'll start to say, "So when is the first pickup going to be?" And I have to explain that I only just dropped the first seeds in the seedling trays in the greenhouse and everything still has to grow.
Do your customers ever come out outside of season so they can see just a field with nothing in it?
I don't know. I don't live on the farm where I work, so they might be out there without me, but I actually live in town and rent land in the country, so they'll be out there alone if they do.
That's interesting in itself that you don't actually own any land, you just rent it. How common is that?
I think for farmers starting up, it's fairly common. Land is such a massive capital outlay. I mean, you could relate to how expensive land is in this region. The 100-acre farm right next to my operation just sold for almost $2 million. So you got to be making a lot of money on those fields to be paying for that. Renting is a lot more manageable and in an ongoing way and doesn't require the same capital outlay. It's also, I mean, it's not as you never know what's going to happen with rented land in the future. You don't have the same security as you do with your own. Trade-offs.
But yeah, from any beginning farmer's standpoint, it is correct that you have to go with what your asset that pays, and then over time, hopefully, you can buy those assets that are more, I hate to say luxury, but you grow into them. You can't just buy everything when you first start farming, you can't have everything new, correct?
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you can't do that. So that's true for most farmers. most business persons. It's not just an agricultural issue, that's for sure. You know, that's how small business starts, I think. So, this is great stuff, Angie. You want to tell our listeners again something about how they get a hold of you? There's your website. Give us a URL. Just go over your how people can get a hold if they'd like.
Sure. It's Fertile Ground Farm or Fertile Ground CSA. Website is just www.fertileground.csa.com.
Yeah, fertileground.csa.
Fertileground.csa.com.
.com, sorry.
And our CSA shares are actually sold out for the season, but there are other great CSAs that still have shares available, and I have them listed on the registration page on my website with links. And we're at the farmers market in Kitchener from mid-June until late October every Saturday out in the sidewalk. So you can always find us there if you want to say hello and ask any questions.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's good news. Well, you know, what other organizations, farm organizations, are you hooked up with? You're an organic grower, so you're with Canadian Organic Growers.
Canadian Organic Growers and Organic Council of Ontario.
And Foodlink.
Foodlink, Ecological Farmers Association. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I work with Farm Start, which is the new farmer support organization, as well. And I'm a member of the National Farmers Union.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are three major farm organizations in Ontario, and one is the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, the National Farmers Union, and the Christian Farmers. And there certainly are some differences between them, but we often come together for like causes. Lots of issues are, we're just on a little different way how to handle it, but we all recognize issues around how do you price your product, how protection from trespassers, all that kind of stuff. There's just so our listeners know that there are good farm organizations out there with different emphasis, but all interested in the same thing.
All working together for the benefit of farmers in Ontario.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the way it works. Each organization has a webpage, of course, and you can read more about how what their latest policy is and how they interpret the issue of the day, whether it be trade talks and the like. And I think you could probably Google National Farmers Union. Mm-hmm. There's their local chapter.
Yeah, there's an Ontario chapter and Canadian national branch.
Mm-hmm. And Christian Farmers as well, and of course, the Ontario Federation of Agriculture. The host of this show today is the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture, and we are, how do we describe ourselves? We are affiliates of the Ontario Federation. What's the official way we...
I believe that's correct.
Jeff. I think so, too. So this we like to talk about our interest from the Federation on Waterloo is those issues that are relevant to our local people. So it's all good. So can you hang around for a while, Angie? We're going to play another couple songs here. We'll talk some more. I'm so glad you've been out. And I hope you will come back and visit us sometime. We're actually, what would be kind of fun to do is you're certainly welcome to send us clips. You know, one of our other people that helps out here showed on the most cell phones you can record something and send us an MP3
or
something.
That would require a smartphone, Jeff.
Okay. Well, I'm struggling here because I don't have one of those things. I guess the main thing is...
I can text.
Okay. Well, what we'd like to do is to make sure that, you know, that if you want to send us some info, we're more than glad to put it on here. So if you'd like to do that, that'd be great.
Great.
So we're going to go to some music here, and I'm just wondering if I could get Angie to read that little bit there, the first two lines. I very much appreciate it.
Hi, this is Angie Koch. You are listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
We'll be right back. Hi, folks, we're back. It's 100.3 Sound FM, CKMS Radio here in Kitchener, Waterloo, and this is the Agriculture Show, and with me is Mr. Mark Reeser, a director with the Ontario Federation of Agriculture, and Angie Cook, who is the manager and 100% do all of everything for her company, FertileGardenCSA.com.
Fertile Ground.
Fertile Ground. Jeepers.
I have a question for Angie, Jeff.
Okay.
So you've been at this for a number of years, and you've developed a good clientele. Where do you see yourself going with this?
That's a really good question. I think I've been at this for 5 years now. I see a couple possibilities for the future. I want to keep doing the direct marketing, and I want to keep doing the CSA. I think having a couple of more acres in production would probably be a little bit more economical. So that's part of what I see, but I'd also like to buy some land at some point and actually be able to do more than just the vegetables, a little bit more of an integrated farm system, have some animals around and some fields that aren't always in heavy production. Vegetable is pretty pretty intensive production. So I'd like to sort of move in that direction and maybe bring some people on board with me who would like to take on some other aspects of a sort of cooperative business model. So I can keep focusing on the vegetables, but have a more well-rounded business.
What would be the benefit to having animals in what did you call it, an integrated farm?
Yes. One of the main benefits is that as an organic grower, I'm not using synthetic fertilizers, but I need to somehow replace all the nutrients that I'm pulling out of the earth. Because, of course, if you want to get nutrients in a carrot that you eat, those nutrients are originally coming from the soil. So every time I harvest a carrot, I'm leaching some nutrients out of the land. I need to replace that if I want to be able to continue growing long term. So compost and manure is one of the best ways as an organic grower of getting more soil back on the land, and livestock are one of the best ways of making compost.
So in a way, livestock manure is a replacement for commercial fertilizer.
Essentially, yep. Composted manure. We don't use raw manure potentially really on vegetables because of the possibilities of E. coli and other contaminant issues, but we compost the manure and then use it.
Yeah, that all agriculture, like the commercial operators are not allowed to put any kind of sewage on their kind of raw organic matter on their stuff.
Well, for our listeners who don't know the difference between manure and compost, could you tell us what the difference is, Angie?
Yeah, compost is a nitrogen and carbon mix that that gets layered together and heated and broken down so that the as manure sits and is turned, the temperature is raised to a particular degree for a particular period of time, and that really helps kill the pathogens. But it keeps the microbial life really active, so that when you put compost on the field, you've ideally gotten rid of the bad guys, the pathogens, and you've increased the number of the good guys, which are all the good little microbes that do a lot of work to help grow crops by making the nutrients available.
I have chickens on my farm, and I use my manure to make compost. And it can be a rather complicated process, but not too hard when you get used to it. And the end product is what always interests me, is because it's just a beautiful product that's kind of like peat moss almost. It doesn't have an odor. It doesn't have it's just kind of nice stuff, almost something like you would buy in a package at the store. And the thing that interests me is it's as if I made it myself. And boy, when I apply that onto my lawn, does my lawn ever grow? And the same thing with my crops. And sometimes I wonder when I put it on my lawn whether that's a good thing to do, because...
you just have to mow it more often.
I just have to mow it more often, which is... Well, once you've done that about 10 times in the summer, you get kind of tired of it.
Well, that's our listeners, urban not listeners, you might be interested. There's a lot to agriculture nowadays, and you've heard a couple of ways to do that. You know, we all have to deal with how do we sell our products, how do we grow it, and the kind of issues there. As Mark pointed out, the most growers have to use a commercial product to grow their stuff, but we all know that certainly the more organic source nutrients are the better, because of their slow release characteristics and the fact that they're not, they tend to be a neutral pH, whereas other products can be acidic or basic. So lots of science in soil science, And once I, you know, Angie, it's getting back to your 30 years of trying this thing. You know, you can read in a book how you're supposed to grow those petunias or those broccolis, but every year has its own challenges, I guess, huh?
Oh, and you try to balance all the different crops and all their different growing needs, and then you've got your cover crops and trying to keep the soil held, and different cover crops are good for different types of things. Yeah. Some of them put nutrients back in the soil, and some of them keep the soil from eroding, and well, and then you've got all your tillage and managing the equipment and what's the right piece of equipment to do what job, and the various post-harvest handling requirements of different things. I mean, there's certainly lots to consider in the
process. Yeah, you have to get the stuff to market in a good condition too. You need some cold storage and things too.
Yep.
So, and you have a nice water well up there. You can turn the hose on if you really have to, I guess.
Yeah, we need to irrigate. It's pretty hard to grow vegetables without irrigation. Hard to make it through July and August. Last year was a real test of that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Angie, what do you think of the future of CSAs and local food in Waterloo region? Is there potential for more?
There's definitely potential for more. At this point, even though we've been stepping up supply of local food, there is certainly still more demand than we're able to fill locally. There's lots of gaps. I think in terms of fresh produce, we do a pretty good job of getting produce directly to consumers, but all of the institutions in our community have a lot more trouble sourcing local, even when they want to. Schools, nurseries, daycares, old age institutions, hospitals. There's really not enough local food produced to support our region at an institutional level. So we have a long ways to go in terms of actually increasing production. Some of it has to do with matches too. Even if we have food that's produced locally, it's not all sold locally. A lot of it is sold outside of the region. And so we could do a lot to improve the matches. And if we could provide the right market locally for some growers who are selling elsewhere, we could maybe keep more of the food within the region.
So you see opportunity for new people to enter the industry?
Certainly. I think at this point, we're so far from saturating. Everyone who joins the local food industry is just helping support it and building more interest and educating people and making the system work better.
So you guys, what do you guys think? What is the ballpark for how much local food can be? Now, the federal and provincial and municipal government are dumping lots of money into this. How was local food and organic meant to It was not meant to replace the whole food supply. Is that in the cards? The reason I say it that way is because I just read something from England where they thought that only 20% of farmers had the presence of mind or the financial means to buy a brand like local or organic. And it seems, I don't know, what do you guys think? It seemed to me we're at probably about 10% market, or maybe 15, another 5 to go.
It depends a lot what type of food we're talking about, too.
Yeah.
Produce, grains, meats, it's different.
Right.
Well, I would suggest, Jeff, that even if organic produce or some other method of growing, even if it's a small percentage, it's still a lot.
Yep.
10% of all the food that's grown is a lot of food.
Oh, yeah. And then, right. Yeah.
I think there's tremendous potential to use other methods of husbandry to entice people to eat and consume local food.
Mm-hmm.
It really has to do with the distribution, doesn't it? Like, unfortunately, we have, how do we get our product out there for people and to get it into the supermarkets? Is there any way around the problem of having to, actually produce, have retail space and have that kind of convenience people want? How do you address that in the long term?
I think there's room for different models, certainly. Different, there's no one model fits all type of solution. I think we need a bunch of different ways of making food available. But I think one of the things that I think is really important is doing a better job of shortening our chains between growers and people who are eating food in the end. Every chain along the way needs to take a cut, which means the farmers are getting less and less and less. The price may go up for the consumer or it may not, but But everyone who has to take a cut along the way, that there's a cost in terms of time, there's a cost in terms of the energy involved in maintaining that food in various stages along the way, and there's just less money going back to the growers in the beginning. So if we could shorten up those chains, I think it would make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Consumers are also interested in safety. Safety of their food. No one wants to get sick. No one wants to have their children become ill. Do you feel that this shortened supply chain is a safe way of producing food?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if it's as short as a consumer comes to me and buys their food, then it's 100% traceable. So that makes for a pretty... I'm highly motivated to make sure that my food is produced really safely because people I know are eating that food. I don't want to make them sick. And they're going to know it was me. There's no hiding in the system, right?
That seems to be a pretty good reason for producing safe food to me.
Yeah. Accountability is a big deal, isn't it? Yeah.
It certainly is. Yeah.
And well, that's a good point there, Mark. I mean, after all, it's such more of a personal connection for those people so inclined that they buy local food. They can actually have the pleasure of meeting the people that do it and seeing how it's grown. And that is some value that's not necessarily monetary, but it's important. And it is monetary because you're able to do a living at it like that.
That's right. It is one way of viably running an agricultural business. Yeah. And I think that's a big statement. It is difficult to run a viable agricultural business in this country these days. Mm-hmm. So finding models that work is really important, because if it's not going to work for farmers, no one's going to go into farming, and we're not going to have any local Canadian food being produced. It's got to be worth it.
It's true. So we're just about in our last little bit of the show here. We have a few more guests to highlight here. So once again, Angie, rock and hang around. We'll do a final wrap-up in about 15 minutes, if you're so inclined. Mark, thanks very much. We're gonna take another short break and a song. We'll line up some more tables and chairs here. We'll be right back here at 100.3 Sound FM, CKMS Radio, the Agriculture Show. See you in a bit.
Hi, this is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you today by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo.
Chev got stuck in the Ford, got stuck, got the Chevron stuck when the Dodge showed up. But the Dodge got stuck in the tractor rut, which eventually pulled out the Ford with some difficulty. A moraine that we'd seen for 1,000 years caused financial joys and biblical fears. It caused some smiles, it caused some tears, but more to the point of our story. For the first time in the collective memory, that old brown prairie that had been so dry for so long was very muddy, boggy, sticky. We'd pull one truck out and get another stuck in, and motors that roar and tires that spin would sink right down to the diff, and we'd all take turns and do it again till no one could move. Call one more friend, come on out here, we need you. Bring your truck. The Chev got stuck in the Ford, got stuck, got the Chev unstuck when the Dodge showed up, but the Dodge got stuck in the tractor rut, which eventually pulled out the Ford and the Dodge. Equal opportunity. Well, got me stuck in the mud so I couldn't rehearse, and Chavez too has missed his work. Richie, he now fears the worst. He stood up his ex-wife, she called him a jerk. Of course, Holtman didn't have nothing better to do. Yeah! Except ranch. The Chev got stuck in the Ford, got stuck, got the Chev unstuck when the Dodge showed up, but the Dodge got stuck in the tractor rut, which eventually pulled out the Ford. Well, it was truck after truck, we all got stuck, except the big old 4x Hutterite truck. We all thought, Lord, are we in luck, but he wouldn't come anywhere near us. Mighty neighborly, mighty neighborly. We used a lot of our backs and a little of our brains. It jacked up the jacks, it snugged up the chains. We all did our very best to refrain from shoveling. We put what timber we had underneath the wheels, and we was all out of sand, but managed to steal 2 sacks of the best modern canola seed you ever did see. That ought to give us some traction. The Chev got stuck in the Ford, got stuck in the Chevron, stuck when the Dodge showed up. But the Dodge got stuck in the tractor rut, which eventually pulled out the Ford. Epilogue. We spilled genetically modified canola seed that was genetically modified for control of the weeds and for big old yields of margarine oil, and raised hell all over that native prairie soil. Agriculture Canada is definitely going to be looking for us.
Hi, Gord Grant here, and you're listening to The Agriculture Show on CKMS Sound FM 100.3 on your dial, or channel 946 Rogers Cable, or maybe streaming live at www.soundfm.ca.
Hi, we're back. It's the 100.3 Sound FM, CKMS Radio. And boy, we have a great show today, folks. I've had Mark here, and so has Angie, and we'll talk to them again. But right now, I just want to introduce our audience to Will and Mariana, and hopefully Samantha will come up and say hello. I'm so glad you folks are here. This is the Agriculture Show, and boy, we just want to be able to talk to our urban listeners. We want to know what you think. We want to know what's on your mind as far as agriculture. And to do that, I'm just so glad that Will had took an interest here. Will is with the station. Tell us about what you're doing at the station now, Will.
Okay. Well, I'm a programmer Fridays 2 to 4. Mm-hmm. I'm also a board member. Promotions and outreach activities, and also corporate secretary. So I have quite a few things that are actually keeping me busy here right now. I'm also a student at the University of Waterloo, so that's eating up some time too.
You'd make a good farmer. You'd wear many hats and do a lot of different things. Mariana, tell us about yourself. You briefly told me you're an intern here.
Yeah, I go to Conestoga College for print journalism, and I'm in my second year.
Is Kitchener-Waterloo area your home?
Yes,
good.
Kitchener.
Well, you'll think you'll have a great time around this station learning stuff, and I hope it's lots of fun. So I'm so glad you just took a chance to sit down here. We're talking about agriculture, and we're just kind of curious, what do you guys think about agriculture? You know, you see farmers out there putting around the fields, growing things. You go to the grocery store, and you buy food, and you're pretty happy, and it's okay. A little. What do you read about in the paper that concerns you about agriculture or that you really think is great?
I haven't seen much on the news lately about agriculture.
For myself, actually, I haven't been following the news too much lately, but I've been doing some, a project on Greek agriculture. Mm. So that's been my main interest, stuff like Virgil and other ancient Greek writers on agriculture, Geronica or something like that. But as far as there's been a lot of stuff about rising prices that I have been taking note of. But the board also, the wheat board thing, was something that popped into
that legislation just passed last year. Yeah,
and other than that, there's occasionally local farming stuff that I hear about. Hens, like Waterloo hens, is something I heard about recently.
I'm trying to get them on the station. It'd be great to talk about. Interesting.
Yeah. So all kinds of stuff. I took a food studies course too. So it all interconnects, I guess, with Ukrainians when they first came over, Mennonites. There's Conrad Grebel over at the university. So farming's part of their history also.
Yes.
So actually quite a bit, only because I've happened to do it in my courses.
Well, at least you have a good awareness of what's going on out there, and I think you and I talked before. In the summer, you like to head north and have your own. You have a property, or you stay at a property and grow some vegetables yourself.
Yeah, I started a garden a couple of years back. Planted some trees. Hopefully, they're still up there.
Yeah.
So I've been expanding the garden every year. Got some really cheap greenhouses this year. They're like $140 each. Which is relatively good, that's with taxes and everything, but it's 12x7, so I'll be doing a little bit of really cheap greenhouse farming this year also. Lots of different types of seeds I'm learning about, different seed types. So yeah, it's actually, there's a lot involved in farming for a successful farming. The climate zone I'm in is absolutely a pretty difficult climate zone. It's 2B or something like that. So it's presenting a lot of farming challenges, to say the least. And the growing season is really short, too.
Oh, that sounds like it. Holy moly. That's That's something else. Mariana, do you have a flower garden, and or are you just too busy as a student to take much time in this agricultural stuff? I think you probably, like most people, like to go for a walk in the country and see the countryside once in a while. You like that?
Yeah, it'd be nice to see, especially since we're always in the city.
Yeah.
I'd like to see all that.
Yeah. It's nice to live in the Kitchener area because you can be out in the countryside in 5 minutes, right? If you want to go for a walk or see trees and plants growing and stuff like that. What would it be like to be in downtown Toronto? Not that this in the world down there, but it's different from here, right?
Yeah. So I like taking pictures too, and photography.
Ah.
So those are great scenes
yeah.
to take pictures of.
So where do you buy your groceries at? Do you like to go to the farmer's market? Or are you happy with what you see at the grocery store? What do you like to buy when you're grocery shopping?
We usually go to Food Basics, mm-hmm. but at times I do like to go to Kitchener Market. It just seems more friendlier and fresh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you like to buy in-season stuff up there or anything particular? Or
I like strawberries.
Strawberries. Who doesn't like strawberries? Probably pretty hard to grow up in your part of the world up there. Hey, well, you won't be growing strawberries up in Zone 7.
Anyway. Oh, there's lots of raspberries and blueberries, though. Blueberries love the soil up there.
Actually, they're meant for that, aren't they? That kind of acid soils
yeah,
like that.
Yeah. So. But lots of raspberries and lots of blueberries. There's wild strawberries. Delicious. Yeah. In my opinion, better than the big strawberries,
yeah.
wild strawberries, little tiny things. I have them growing in my backyard too.
Yeah.
They are so good. Love them. I took them from, like, I ate them in the woods and brought those seeds back and planted them, and now I have a little patch there. So.
Ah, and they're going okay? They're doing okay?
They're thriving.
So, like, you have to make the kind of same kind of soil, right? Like, that's kind of an acid, rocky soil up there, I think, and you'd have to...
Predominantly. There's a bunch of clay, so it's relatively acidic soil mm-hmm. overall. I've saved up my eggshells, though.
Well, that's a good thing. So, well, that's good. I'm so glad that you took 5 minutes here to talk to us. We're going to wrap up our show. Our next DJ is coming in, and it's the agriculture show, and I just want to thank you, Will. I want to thank you... Marianne, for just talking a little bit about agriculture and what kind of topics and concerns or interests you have in the business, and so I'm glad that our other guests here we can talk about that now too, just because we do want to have a message that our urban people want and what they want.
For sure, it's always good to get that feedback back, and I have to thank you for having us on.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. All right, folks, it's the Agriculture Show, 100.3 Sound FM, and listen to. CKMS Radio. So we'll be right back. Here we go. Thank you, guys.
Well, life on the farm, kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy to me can't hack. Early to rise, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. Days are all filled with the needs of country charm. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. When the work's all done and the sun's setting low, pull out the fiddle and the rosin up the bow. Kids are all asleep, so I keep the cattle low. And thank God I'm a country boy. I'd play a solid gooden all day if I could, but the Lord and my wife didn't take it very good. So I fiddle when I can, work when I should. And thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. Sun's coming up like a cake's on the middle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo-hoo! Well, I wouldn't trade my life for diamonds or jewels. I never was one of them money hungry fools. Rather have my fiddle and my farming tools. Thank God I'm a country boy. Yeah, city folk driving in a black limousine. A lot of sad people thinking that's a mighty keen. Son, let me tell you now exactly what I mean. Thank God I'm a country boy. Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. The sun's coming up, I got cakes on the fiddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. Thank God I'm a comfortable one. Well, I got me a fine one.
face on the riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny little riddle.
Woohoo! Thank God I'm a country boy.
Hi, folks. It's Tuesday afternoon, and this is the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Steger. Thanks for coming out, you guys. Thanks, Mark, for coming out today.
Well, you're very welcome, Jeff.
And Angie, thanks for
coming
out.
Jeff.
Hope we can have you back again sometime. We talked a little bit about Angie's CSA, the Community Shared Agriculture Model, and Mark very kindly participated and asked some great questions. So delighted to have Will and Marianne on here to talk a little about agriculture. It was interesting to hear from other people what they think about agriculture, isn't it? They probably saw some parts in there you'd like to know more about, and hopefully we can, in the future, talk a bit more about some of those things that are pluses and minuses.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of work to keep up with what people want.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm excited about is that people seem to be asking more questions than they have been, and engaging differently with the story of their food and wanting to understand how things are produced and where they're coming from and what some of the impact is on the environment and what some of the impact is on their body. And there's a return to wanting a little bit more of a sense of a connection to what we're putting in our bodies. And yeah. I think that can only go in good directions.
Yeah, Mark?
Well, I've grown my own fruits and vegetables at home in my garden for most of my life, and I'm just glad that other people are now finally showing some interest in it also.
Yeah.
Your own local food is the best food there is, and second best is buying it from somebody else.
Well, I hear that, and we're lucky that we have both kinds in the region. If you want to buy a local food, you can, and if you want to buy a grocery store type product, then you're just as well and just as healthy and just as good. So that's good
news.
Ask
your grocery store to start carrying the local stuff as well. Let's pull those together.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's interesting, Angie, because that's absolutely true. People in a grocery store, owners, managers, and so on, respond to what customers desire and what they ask for. And if you want something better in a grocery store, if you want something fresh, you want something local, by all means, tell them.
Okay, folks, that's it for our show today. Mark, you want to read us out of here?
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Thanks, Mark. That's it, folks. We're out of here, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now.